Mandate with you, as you may be aware, the president is that out of the 2005 outcome document. This is a very tricky issue which member states are dealing with up to today, but we said it here with Slovakia. And to that end, I think in November I want to call and rush off on a seminar here with Slovakia on the security council, security sector reform. The other, we are one of the three vice chairs on counterterrorism. And this is because many of the working institutions at the counterterrorism committee that seem to be advisable, divided into three. So we chair one of the counterterrorism committees. We also nominated the lead liaison on Timor Leste in the Security Council. In this capacity, we have to follow development in Timor Leste closely and consult regularly with infrastructure projects that we approach the nature of Sri Lanka Malaysia. And we are responsible for drafting resolutions on Security Council statements on Timor Leste. I may just add that indeed, I did take a visit to Timor Leste just before the presidential and parliamentary elections to consult with the government and the current Malaysian Rock of Membership, January 6th, July 2007. Our participation in the Security Council, we dealt with a number of issues, majority of which related to the conflict of conflict in Africa. South Africa has naturally played a key role in these discussions and contributed significantly to the country's quest for peace and stability in the continent. It is important to note that in the first 7 months, the majority of decisions and resolutions taken by the Council were unanimous without any divisive vote. Our initiative on Chapter 8, we decided to utilize our membership of the Council to initiate a further exploration of the relationship between United Nations and regional and sub-regional organizations cooperation, and in particular the African movement, in the maintenance of international peace and security. In terms of Chapter 8 of the UN Charter, in terms of the UN Charter. On March 28, 2007, our minister chaired the Ministerial Open Debate and Food Council to launch this initiative. South Africa was successful in convincing the Security Council to request the Secretary General to prepare a report setting out options for sharing the burden associated with peacekeeping and the UN, between the UN and regional organizations. The initiative is also a direct response of the EU summit decision that calls upon the Council to find ways of deepening the partnership between regional organizations. We intend to sustain this initiative in Chapter 8, this generation, throughout our tenure. We hope that out of this we emerge concrete ideas of enhancing this cooperation and abiding on methods of credit. South Africa's president of the Security Council, in March 2007, South Africa held the rotating presidential project of the U.S. Security Council for the first time. The agenda of the Council was particularly busy during South Africa's term of the presidency, as it considered more than 30 items on its agenda. In this role, we were responsible for facilitating work for the Council in the following. Initiatives to improve working methods of the Council. Within the mouth of our presidency, our delegation in New York conducted regular meetings to keep the African countries fully informed on development in the Council. The feedback provided by African countries also helped us for our intervention with the Security Council. In an effort to improve the Security Council's transparency and accountability vis-à-vis the wider UN membership, we revive a practice whereby the President of the Council conducts regular briefings on the work of the Council to members of the General Assembly and the international media. An initiative on women in peacekeeping to mark the International Women's Day on 8th of March 2007, we introduced the presidential statement. cancer, which has led a lot of women in regional academic services. Let's note that this was the first time since the adoption of the resolution 1325 in 2000 that the council was called upon to take a formal decision in relation to the situation of women under armed conflict. The South African statement was also significant in that it addressed the role of women in the comprehensive manner, recognizing that women are peacemakers, political leaders, and business people rather than victims of conflict. The General Assembly invited South Africa as president of the country to read out the same statement at the annual UN commemoration of International Women's Day, where it was welcomed by the participants. Our initiative on small arms and light weapons. The Security Council has traditionally ignored the threat posed by the proliferation of small arms and light weapons due to the position of the U.S., which is influenced by its gun lobby, against the U.S. and other countries also. The issue has traditionally been considered by the General Assembly through the Committee dealing with disarmament issues. Through our membership of the Council, we took the initiative to draft a presidential statement which called on the Secretary General to present the Council with a report on the impact of the use of small arms and light weapons. On Rwanda, in March 28, the Security Council considered the indefinite lifting of the measures imposed on Rwanda in 1995. South Africa was instrumental in assisting Rwanda to secure its objective of lifting the arms embargo and convincing the Council members that the lifting of sanctions would create at least this country in its close conflict and constitution. The matter has been unresolved in the country for the past year. For Nigeria, also in March, the Council considered the report of experts on diamonds and timber embargo on Nigeria. During the day, the Council, South Africa was instrumental in getting the Council to accept the recommendations of the group of experts to allow the lifting of diamonds and timber sanctions following the acceptance of Nigeria and the Kimberley process certification scheme. We hope that this act will contribute to reconstructing the work process in Nigeria. The UN Security Council undertook a trip to Africa in the days of 18th March, 18th to the 22nd June. This four nation visit by the Council also included the headquarters of the African Union in Addis Ababa, from Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, and the country of the Congo. South Africa and the United Kingdom were nominated as the lead countries for Addis Ababa, Ghana, and Sudan. And Addis Ababa, the UNSC, and the African Union Peace and Security Council held a joint session to discuss the African conflict situation. South Africa played a key role in drafting the joint communique and saw that the final text emphasized the importance of closer cooperation between the Security Council of the United Nations and the Peace and Security Council of the AU, the maintenance of international peace and security. A visit of the Security Council to this country was therefore important as part of the consolidation of the policy development already underway, namely the successful work in the DRC, the peace agreement in Cote d'Ivoire, the acceptance of the government of Sudan, of the United Nations, the AU, and the profile. Our challenge, as we look at it after our 7 months, were as follows. The first one, most important one, is preserving South Africa's central foreign policy. South Africa's initial experience in the Security Council suggests that preserving or advancing a principle. So advancing principles in a council dominated by the five permanent member can be an extremely critical task. The Charter of the UN grants its proponents disproportionate representation to African countries and veto power to the five permanent members. The veto also makes reform of the power structure in the council, unlike the since the permanent member can be for any proposal that would in any way dilute their power or oblige them to share power with others. This is another problem and challenge is faced by institutions of smaller countries. This challenge is increasing, is an increasing tendency for issues of the council on the council agenda to be negotiated in small groups of developed countries dominated by developed countries outside New York. One of the examples there was in the Cortez, now seen dealing with the issues of the Middle East. So the Middle East has recently been taken away from the UN to the Cortez. So we think this is one of the challenges, because we then, you know, we are sometimes maybe facing the state of country where the smaller groups come back to the country. See, strategic alliance. South Africa is conscious. South Africa contrasts to work closely with all members of the country. We consult and collaborate with Ghana and Congo, who are the three African members who are on African issues. But we also consult widely with members of the social countries, including those members who are part of the non-aligned movement as well as permanent members. We also do consult with some members who have been in the security countries before, who may not be in the country, but we continue to do consult with all the 14 members of the country. The last observation we made is that the first 7 months of our tenure has shown the importance of proactive communication on South Africa's rights in the country. The debate that ensued following our vote on Myanmar, Germany is not Ghana, Myanmar, Lebanon and Iran displayed a gap that sometimes exists in the understanding that the government has of the work of the council and perceptions that are created to the public. In this regard, 2 weeks ago, Minister of Foreign Affairs convened a roundtable discussion with key members of the South African Civil Society, representing the academia, media, NGOs, to discuss the roster membership of the council. The roundtable discussions addressed a number of concrete suggestions to the government. The United Nations Security Council is comprised of the 15 members I want to discuss. The Security Council mandate under the UN Charter. In accordance with Article 24 of the Charter of the United Nations, the Council bears the primary responsibility for the maintenance of international peace and security. It is also the only international body intended to authorize the use of force in situations not involving individual or collective services as defined in Article 1 of the Charter. In terms of the Charter, the Security Council may respond to a potential threat to peace through non-coercive Charter 6 measures, that is diplomacy, or to extra threats to peace, breach of peace, or an act of aggression through coercive Chapter 7, measures, sanctions, use of force, etc. In terms of actual practice, the Security Council may also choose not to respond to a situation or to mandate peacekeeping and other arrangements that were not foreseen in the Charter. The following kind of specific situation are currently on the agenda of the country. In Africa, as you can see, many Burundi, Rwanda, South African Republic, Pakistan, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Somalia, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea-Bissau, Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Indonesia, Western Sahara, the Middle East, still Palestine, Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Europe, here is Cyprus, Russia, Kosovo, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Macedonia, America, the Haiti, Asia, Afghanistan, Timor Leste, North Korea, and Myanmar. I may just conclude by saying, when you complete the group, so we thank you for your leadership. We got information that was managed also to ensure that the Security Council extends the army that is keeping in command. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we then ask the platforms to ask questions on the briefing? To raise the issues that you want to raise and discuss with that.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to ask Ambassador Nene, where are the other three African countries that are part of this council, those who similarly to us on the top issues that you've highlighted? In other words, the Myanmar, the Czechs, and Zimbabwe, and the two countries that are whether we then are blocked to the basic
thank you, Mr. President. I will start to begin your presentation by our first few comments and then our commercial position. To me, this is a very old idea where I'm asking myself a lot of questions like I think when we visited Pretoria, we raised the issue of that the dissemination of information to the people. I think that is a question. How do we see people? Why I'm raising this issue? I'm raising this in the document is very interesting about how some of the problems are solved by the security concerns. For example, whereby they intervene by lifting off the why I'm raising this issue is because of the situation in China. Some people maybe they thought that we must do the same, like what happened in China. You can see that when China was a massacre, okay. Because they don't bring straight and correct approach. What must we do now? And then also, I'm asking myself, what criteria is being used in order like the last paragraph which you indicated that the foreign countries specifically are currently on the agenda of the security council. I want to find what criteria is being used in order to put those countries in the security council agenda. Because also my worry is that Zimbabwe is not addressed, doesn't have any case. But people are keeping quiet. We are keeping quiet about the countries which might be most dangerous, who I think nuclear than a light. We keep quiet. Therefore, our listening is to clarify us. And then, the last recommendation that please make sure that other people are getting education about what is happening. Because it seems like we're doing nothing while there are things which I do.
In dealing with the Myanmar question, one could put in a different approach on that. But I think that when we consider voting in the Security Council or consider issues, what consideration, what strategic considerations to be made in making a decision as to what our approach should be on specific issues. What considerations are we making? I raise this because when the Myanmar issue came with an attack on the issue of human rights, and we made deeper on this thing because I cannot believe, maybe I should not say what I believe, because I mean, basically answering the question that I want to find out from the department. That what were the considerations? It was said that we compromised South Africa to change the human rights cause. That's what the leaders put it. and I'm aware that that was in a way clarified in terms of the intervening to go to the Human Rights Commission and all those issues. However, the central question that remains as to it's not only being an issue often referred to the Human Rights Council. What are other specific considerations that we made in taking a particular position in this particular issue? It is said that we blocked a debate on Zimbabwe and our, on the basis that it's not a threat to international peace, which is true. But over and above that particular aspect of it being a threat to international international security, which is not factual, I think we have more threats than Zimbabwe, and that threatens the security of the world. Instead, some countries themselves are threatening the security of the world. But besides that, what were the other considerations that we made to decide as to what was best for us as members of the Security Council to take those particular positions? And we've been able to deliver the continent in the position that we've been able to take in the Security Council.
Thank you. May I start with another comment for the I think, you know, our latest briefing document, we do try to set about our strategic objectives in the first chapter, one, to promote our foreign policy and national interest, two, to do what the chapter is supposed to do, contribute to international peace and security, three, to enhance multilateral relations, especially for international law. And for to promote and advance the African agenda. Now, we're doing this thing in the review of many others. I think in the last few years, one of the biggest consultations between members of the General Assembly is an encroachment by the security forces on mandates of other organs of the body of the United States. And we took the position in South Africa, whether it's in Parliament, whether it's on Ethiopia, whether it's on human rights, or anything like that. In most, or in all our statements, we always warned against the security council and encroaching on mandates of the IEA, mandates of the Human Rights Commission, then, and any other bodies, because we felt that there is an international architecture that, as it is now, does not need to be changed. And the 2005 outcome document also confirms. So we still believe that the UN as is, in terms of its own governance of international issues, multilateral issues, is still well structured. So this is the approach that sort of guides us when we sit down and look at the issue. And we make proposals to the department. So as a result, one of the biggest questions we have to ask ourselves and get an answer, as the international community and ourselves agreed that Security Act or Issue Act or what constitutes a threat to international security, as this is the basic mandate of the. And we producing a field ultimately, then if our community has not reached that scale, we still go further to consult regional organizations that they indicated to them, the us we conducted, especially the Malala of Asia. Whether do they think Myanmar is a threat to regional people security? They said no. So it adds to our arsenal of pointers or elements that we put together in trying to arrive at a decision as to whether this really would serve the international community best by bringing these things to the country. So these are the things we look at when we make a test and make analysis and then make our proposals to the government and then ultimately give instructions to our maybe in New York or where it's in it. Now, I'm not so sure. So this is my engineer, but I'm sure that they did not vote with us. I don't think they voted. They didn't vote with us. I don't know how to talk for them. I can only talk for South Africa. We went through the process I just explained. We looked at our own guiding principles, which we agreed to, and gave it to us and offered it to the club. We were in fairness to ask people who are neighbors how to do that. But one of, as I said, the basic thing was that Jesus is seven. Is always questioning the security council against and conflict. And we are one of the champions of that question. And we couldn't be seen just to go to another security council to ignore the question we've always made. One of the tasks we set ourselves when we went to Addis, before we approved, we agreed with the chairperson of the AU people that we should try as much as possible before the close of unity between three members that are the security council who are from us. And we took that as one of the challenges that we should achieve. And fellow and us to be beneficial of them, we should also make sure we revise the non-aligned caucus, which is paralyzed a little bit before we go. Go further than that and ensure that the Africa group in New York gets a regular group. And we entrusted our deputy ambassador there to the one. So as I know, he's doing that immediately. But that's why we took him away from Addis Ababa, because he said, since he knows the African culture, since he's been dealing with them for so many years, he would be an advantage for Ambassador Leon. Majority of the issues in the country are from the African.
We will consult, we will continue to consult with all members of the Catholic Church, even if we know we will not approach them. That includes the architecture for various reasons, maybe for the whole national interest, or maybe we don't see eye to eye on certain issues, and the whole political outlook. But we will continue. That's a very practical thing for the Catholic Church. And that's the commitment we gave to the area. And that led us to choose a team during our presidency that enhances the workings of the AU and we're still following the commitment we made to the AU that we practice the team for the majority. So we continue to do that, but it doesn't mean that if we go and consult with them, we always have an enemy, let alone contest. We may have a general understanding of the problem, but sometimes you are clearly somebody. And it so often happens. Then the following day, when the crunch comes, that it may tell you that I may not follow the discussions we had yesterday. My instructions are different. It's nothing for me. Zimbabwe, I'm not sure what
it was a dressing on the humanitarian situation, and it happened during the time of our presidency. But the question of the inclusion of Zimbabwe in the agenda of the Security Council is of course a different matter, and I think there the debate is similar to what would have happened during the discussion of Myanmar. Just to say that on the issue of Zimbabwe, of course this issue has arisen in the Security Council even long before we became a member. And even when South Africa was not a member of the Security Council, there were other countries who were members of the Council at that time who opposed it. So even in 2006, for example, before we were a member, this issue was raised, and it was opposed by other countries, not by South Africa, because we were not opposed at that time, because we were not a member. But when we had the president in March, then it arose, there was a request from one of the delegations that there should be a treaty on the humanitarian situation, and that was done. But I swear it was focusing on the humanitarian situation in Zimbabwe.
I think we noticed, round table, the advice we got about determination of the partnership. I think on Zimbabwe we got a clear understanding of how we came up with the partnership, and most likely as things then, it may, if it ever comes up, it should be on its own merit. But we'll still be guided by the kind of Council is out of the agenda of the Council. Some are brought in. I remember the Council. Some are brought in because the situation in which country has find itself constant. Constitute, I would say, it demands that the Security Council attend. That is the state. One of them, the border issues is in the Eritrea. It stops being a bilateral issue because the UN is coming in to separate the forces and all that. But on a technical level, I think that we can handle that one.
As Ambassador said, in terms of the charter of the UN, any member of the Security Council has a right to bring an agenda item to the, and then they have, of course, the consensus from the other 14 members that particular issue must be addressed by the Security Council. Also, the UN Secretary General has got the power to bring to the attention of the Security Council any matter in the world that he deems that it constitutes a threat to international peace and security. So those are the different mechanisms, but I mean, ultimately it is the members of the Security Council themselves that have got to agree, to reach consensus and agree that this must be on the agenda. And that's what has happened with almost all the issues that that Ambassador Nene mentioned that are currently on the agenda of the Security Council.
One of the most difficult issues that other members of the international community have found in various commissions, whether the General Assembly, Human Rights Commission, is to agree with this mission. Not yet. I don't know how long. Child soldiers. This is a program, obviously, members of the international community. And it takes a very keen view, actually, a very serious view of the issue of employing children in Namcos. That's why special members, a special envoy that deals with this issue and reports. Not to say different kinds of issues, but it's a serious issue of the United Nations, that's why the Secretary General has that some of the specialists who didn't speak about the main kind of cases. I'm not sure that try to cover the strategic consideration of the Secretary. It's not because school are critical.
Okay,
make that follow up.
Yeah, it's just the issue of Zimbabwe. I understand that South Africa's chair of the country doesn't allow the issue to come to the agenda. But in a situation like this, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm just saying my ignorance, would he have consulted our representatives with the African country school? And would he have got support to the council vote then, or did he just allow it? Because
that
was I'm just not clear about that on the
Zimbabwe issue.
I mean, would we
have consulted the African country? No, not better. But it did not arise. Yes. It did not arise as an issue of threat international peace and security. It only arose because there was a request for a briefing session on the humanitarian situation in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. Yes.
The contradiction has arrived because it should have been a speculative question. Would we have been able to get support? How do you answer that question? It's looking at different countries.
Yeah,
if you raise a speculative question, it becomes difficult to answer. Honorable Matasu, can you say something?
Two questions. First one is a technical question. Technical master. You say the agenda is put there by consensus. What happens if there's an objection? And then can you ever use the agenda? This is an objection for the money. Then, your case of, at least in the first direction, can actually also consider strategic alliance. Now, as you know, we are members of this association called the Commonwealth. The question is whether
our association there. Does it help us? Does it help us in the UN to put out the matter? As I said, that you are a member there. That is strategic. With the members of the Commonwealth constitute the strategic allies on matters that arise. Or does that association help us in any way?
Firstly, I'd like to thank you in the presence and the department for recognizing the role that you play by using and peacekeeping and security. And I would further thank them for extending the South African National Women's Day to an international Women's Day as well. Also thanking them for recognizing that women should not only be represented in the conflict situation, that women are in distinct and important role. But I would like to know if I understand you talk about equality, but I would like to know if there are any support systems or programs that are in place supporting women in the cooking and the security. Like women in Darfur, we met many of them in South Africa as soldiers and as powerful women. Would like to know if there are any programs that are supporting women. I'm also aware of the issue of equality that you have. Thank you.
Something we are really concerned about the two issues, and then I'll end up. The first one is about our approach to humanism. I think we must clarify that because we believe that a problem like the situation in humanism, people, they must be the one about their problems, informing their problems, not to say that they mustn't have any internet and support. But my worry is the recent stakeholder issue. I mean, indicated in your report, but before you got it, you know, some of them are former colonizers. What do they want there? Because I believe that security has to do. I don't want to support you, but on that. Then also, to whether appreciate the role which is played by South Africa, I think it would be a difference. Because this area was suppressed for a long time, and nothing was happening. And the outside world didn't know anything about Timothy, it was just quiet. Because it's the most flooded country in Asia. I think it would be a difference. And then the other one is Western Sahara. What is the role to say by South Africa in Western Sahara? Because there are things that are not possible. And I believe that if South Africa can take a lead, other countries can follow. Because if you keep quiet, other colonizers, the elephant foot, the elephant being happening in this country. And then, last one is about the issue. No matter you try to respond on this, I think, yes, there's something which is happening, but it's not enough. Why I'm raising this? We used to say women, all the time, they are the first victims, women and children are the first victims. But now, I think it's realized because there's something with the women. But what about, you know, the children? I'll put an example. I believe somewhere in the country, no matter how the situation has been normalized, but somewhere there are areas which are experiencing problems, and we believe that they are against the children, which is an advantage to an extent of overturning the most of the
one of the leader was supposed to charged by using the children as a witness. So, as a witness to this case, that there's something happening, it means that something must be, must happen as part of follow-up on this one. Thank you.
And Brother Rafi, you know, South Africa has a good relationship with the members of the people. And you raise the fact that sometimes you engage with people and they say, my mandate from home says this, why should you might have reached some common understanding on the discussion. And now the question that one worries about is the fact that when the UN deals with issues that you regard as constituting insecurity in the world, if we ever find a way to discuss the approaches adopted by, in some instances, members of the people that create insecurity. Because if you look at the major contributors in the world in security are actually key members of the people. And Zimbabwe, if at any point constitutes international threat, it's probably a minus 0.01 as compared to members of the P5 that are key stakeholders that create an element of insecurity in the world. It has been, in fact, in one respect, it has been pointed out in that respect that the findings indicate the fact that one specific country has contributed a substantial amount in that insecurity of the world. Have we ever find a way to discuss the conduct of members of the people in creating instability and threatening peace in the world? And therefore, following that particular question would be, the raise the fact that members of the council will take a dim view on the usage of child soldiers, which I have seen. But recently we've seen how people have used civilians as human shields. And we can quote what we saw in the Lebanon-Israel conflict, how ordinary civilians were used by the Israeli military as human shields when they raided areas. How has that been responded to? In terms of using civilians as human shields. The other question that one is interested in is purely an administrative question that deals with our own mission. Given the new task that we've undertaken, have we sufficiently put more bodies that could be able to deal with the challenges that mission will present? The last issue deals with when we approach issues in South Africa, I always believe that multilateral approach is the best option in all these other approaches that we find. And if you look at in the recent years, the UN finds itself in difficulties. In fact, to some instances, the multilateral approach was replaced by unilateral approaches to dealing with this international strategy. And how do we find in our assessment now, do we think that are we able to bring the world to a situation where issues that confront the world are approached as a multilateral collective, or do we still see the interest of the powerful that when their interests are at stake, they will in their own way deal with those issues with the coalition that they will form outside the UN processes. And if that's the case, I would believe that such behavior does in fact contribute seriously in creating insecurity in the world. And to what extent have we been able to bring those issues to the debate, even the fact that each member state could bring that issues to the debate. Have we as South Africa considered to look at the behavior of members of the P5 in creating this interest?
facility. And to what extent do you believe that we should be able to create these issues openly? The very last issue is our ability as South Africa to deliver the continent in the position that we make in the Security Council. You indicated in the briefing that, and in your response you indicated that we do a number of briefings to the African ambassadors that are sitting at the UN or African missions that are sitting in the UN. But what does not come clearly is our ability to can deliver that vote, that support, that solidarity of the continent in certain positions and challenges that we need. I'm taking into account the fact that in some instances people are more concerned with their budgetary support, and therefore they might not willingly take certain decisions because those who are powerful and they can withdraw their budget support for those countries. I'm taking that into account. But we should be able to deliver a substantial number of African countries to positions that they are correct. And that's what does not come out clearly, whether are we able to deliver them to that particular position. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to answer maybe one or two questions that I used, all the complicated ones for the ambassador. On the issue of the agenda, the way that it works, I mean, if any country wants to bring an issue to the Security Council for inclusion on the agenda, if there is consensus amongst the 15 members of the Security Council, then it will be included. But if there are six countries that oppose, which means if it's opposed by six countries, even if there is no veto, it cannot be included. And then what also happens is that the inclusion of an item in the agenda of the Security Council is considered a procedural matter. So there is no veto on procedural matters. For example, what happened with the case of Myanmar is that last year in 2006, I think it was about September, October, before we even joined the Security Council, this issue was brought into the agenda of the Security Council by one of the members. So what happened at that stage was that it was considered to be a procedural issue. There were many countries, including African countries, who were members of the Security Council at that time, who abstained, but they don't have a veto. China and Russia could not veto it at that time because it was considered a procedural matter. So then it was included in the Security Council because we could not secure a swift vote that say no. However, then what happened in January was that it was then brought now for discussion as a substantive matter. Now when it becomes a substantive matter, then the veto comes. So what it means is that once it's a substantive matter and China and Russia veto it, then that means it cannot go further. So there is that differentiation that is made, but you do need to make sure that if you want to bring something to the Security Council that is not opposed by six countries, then it can be included. But it is opposed by six. If, for example, when Myanmar was brought in last year, then if there were six countries that had said no, then it would not have come in. On the issue of children, I'm concerned, just to add what the ambassador said, there is a working group on children in armed conflict. It is currently chaired by France. It is one of the most active working groups within the Security Council. It does a lot of work on this issue. And I think what is important about this working group is that it's not only focuses on those countries that are in the agenda of the Security Council. It looks at the issues of children in armed conflict even on some of the other countries that are not necessarily on the agenda. So South Africa plays a very instrumental role in the work of this working group. It's one of the subsidiary bodies of the Security Council that are very active. And this is a issue of concern for many members of the EU and not just members of the Security Council. The last point that I would make is demystify the issue of the South Africa vis-a-vis other African countries. I mean, throughout, from January up to now, we have worked very closely with other African states around common position on many issues. The recent example is this adoption of the hybrid revolution on the floor for Darfur. In that revolution, we consciously work together as the three African countries because this type of hybrid operation that is now going to be deployed in Darfur is the first time that you have the UN cooperating in this manner with the regional organization. And therefore, and this was, of course, an initiative that was already endorsed by the families of the AU. So we work very closely with Ghana and Congo in engaging the co-sponsors of the revolution, which were the UK and France. And most of the negotiations that led to the adoption of the hybrid were actually negotiations between the three African countries together, plus the UK and France. So there is a lot of cooperation on many issues, on Somalia. Ambassador Nene also referred to the fact that we also took a conscious position in the country that we will always try to advance agreed aid positions. Because as you can see, the agenda of the Security Council and the agenda of the AU Peace and Security Council, there's a big overlap. About six of these countries that are on the agenda of the Security Council are also on the agenda of the AU PSC. So whenever the AU PSC therefore takes those decisions, it is incumbent upon us working with the two other African countries to advance those positions within the Security Council. And I would say that we have been doing that effectively. Ambassador Nene referred in his opening remarks to the issue of Somalia. Just yesterday, the Security Council again took up a decision of the AU PSC, which was to extend the African mission in Somalia by another 6 months. So the Security Council has endorsed that decision as well in its own way. But that was also a conscious work of the three African countries, of course, working with the rest of the members of the Security Council. The Counter AIDS initiative is again a very important initiative for South Africa, not just for our own country, but for the rest of the continent. Because through this initiative, I mean, one of the challenges that the AIDS is facing at the moment is the kind of support and the resources that are needed to maintain a peacekeeping mission, whether it is in Darfur or Somalia. So what we are saying, therefore, is that we do need to get the UN and the rest of the international community to share this burden. And I think what we are doing, therefore, with this, as another member was saying, with this Chapter 8 initiative, is that our hope is that by the time we leave the Security Council in December 2008, there will have been concrete mechanisms and concrete methods of this burden sharing between the AU and the UN Security Council. And then I could go on and on, but there's quite a wide array of issues in which we work very closely and in unison with the two other African countries for the benefits of the AU and, of course, South Africa's foreign policy itself is based on the advancement of the African agenda. So I thought I must just highlight those issues.
Thank you. The three other settings to the Commonwealth is very difficult because the two organizations deal with the country. When we were the head of the Security Council, we came to people working in the field, think along the lines of what the Security Council of the Maintenance of International Security. So it would only under extraordinary circumstances when we need, let's say, a commonwealth, and then we silence on a bilateral basis, raise issues and relations in the United, and we would be raising them to go to a fourth member of the United Nations, but also find ourselves in this community of nations called the Commonwealth. So it is advantageous but not great. Commonwealth as a trade issue in the issues of development for the nation, it's a great country. But it does not help. So let's say we find ourselves in Uganda later this year and then we need to keep Britain and the people that under pressure the system people who still have in the bilateral pressure can be seen as well. Because the total issue is very focused. So it really does not happen most of the time. Whether that I could not really define that relationship in the Commonwealth as strategic for the security. But it does not get, as I say, on a bilateral basis.
to engage people who, countries or member states, who may be our strategic partners in the future.
Well,
that was confusing. The question that I was asking confusing the two organizations. It was just about the fact that you have friends in a particular body and you have them again in another body to be all members of the other body. The association, those friends that you find that are common in these two bodies. Because you have other interests elsewhere, which is that commonality of interest. So that was the question of data.
Obviously, we would do that. Most of the time, we would be on a very penny. We wouldn't go on general.
Okay.
I'm not sure system security is a quality program for women. But your question is twofold. The political one for the surrounding company, and the other one is the one you explained for. So if you say you are the lead country, the lead nation in the security country, because that country is in the security country, and as you explained for. And when we speak out with possibilities of doing our things, we then have to be seen to be taking care of anything that is a particular country will deal with on Timothy. We are the one contracting. Timothy, I will be the one contracting the checking of the original obligation. The minister finds itself be the one to make sure that the particular country is being to ensure that the problems of Timothy. In as far as the mandate of the security council is concerned, they can help to the benefit of the people. The other one, I think, is the political issue. What are the Brazilians, the Australians, who are former colonizers once? Let's do it out of the security council. In terms of the peace in the
That's the reason for this committee to discuss that. It went there, but I'm saying that look at the role of what other countries is. In that particular situation, you said to our responder that you account that with him, and you say that it generates some excitement for us to know what is it that they're going to say that we cannot say now. Can we set up a meeting at some point?
No,
it's not a
problem.
Okay.
Not a problem in the sense that this resides in somebody's responsibility, and that's what I must say that is KCIS. So they would have exact and up-to-date information on this part of your question. But I can do so, but I know this because I was there before the presidential and the parliamentary council. So updated and certainly for good governance in the foreign affairs, we don't encourage on material management. What is our role? We discussed this yesterday in the meeting. But it was in respect to last week. New Asia, Africa, strategic partnership. terms of the service center, I think after the Moroccans brought their so-called plan for self-determination, you know, or independence, this is not called self-determination, done a lot of work around the world. When we consulted on this issue, for the Service Center, when we consulted the Polisario for the Service of the UN, they said they could live with the resolution that was being proposed because it has a lot of fundamental aspects that will advance. So we take a few from that. They then came up to say to us, when the real negotiations begin, they know we won't be there, but they would like South Africa to be next door. And my team is right next door. So it's difficult for us to take the lead on this issue because, as you may can imagine, there is Algeria. So we work very closely with Algeria and Polisario on the issue of Western Sahara. That is now the big country side. And again, on the bilateral issue, North Africa and Africa plan to give you the latest and the most updated information on how that dealing with Polisario, both the ambassador here, the president of Polisario, and the United States. But I think our relations with Polisario are very strong. That is why they say if and when the negotiations they do start, they would like South Africa to be next door all the time. Not much is done on Africa's to reconsult in the seaside. We have a relationship capacity with the seaside, good relations, but it's uneven. It's also informed by the way in which all of us, those participate in multilateral fora, we are issue driven. Today, we may vote together and even co-sponsor a certain resolution because our countries are isolated. In the afternoon, when we meet the WHO, I think this side I might be your rival or your opponent. In the same day when we meet at the ILO, we may still keep us. So we are issue driven. Even also in the CFI, on a bilateral level, we are, I think there is something. But at multilateral front, most of the time, it's issue-driven. But we do consult prior, and they also do consult prior to bringing up major issues with the Security Council. I can easily say that there was so much consultation between us and the Bush administration before he invaded Iraq. I'm sure you remember that. The minister of the Sahara to talk to Saddam because the Americans are demanding this and this and this. And the president later and that, but we do. On Iran, the president had to appoint Ambassador Menti as the special envoy so that we consult because the Americans can come or whoever they come and say, you have better relations. So we do that maybe it was prior to them bring them to the floor of the Security Council. We took a visit prior to our assumption of this non-permanent structure by the government to go to almost all members of the Security Council and to explain to them our approach to the Security Council. And one of the issues we explained to them was that we may find ourselves clashing with them at this station of encroachment. So we took visits to all the different states, the Commonwealth, Ghana, almost all the members of prior years before we went into the so it is part of, I think, part of what we do. I think in Lebanon, the international community condemns some point or another, if it became necessary to do the for the international community to provide protection. So, that's what we're trying to do in that. Protection to civilians and poor and control to parties to take care of the humanitarian problems. So, really, the world would not sit idle by and look at people under arms.
I'm reading different statistics. When Israel's weight came to Lebanon, it was shown on the media where they were actually pushing civilians back. The soldier behind the civilian in front. But should they be fired, the civilian must take the bullet. And that was shown throughout. And what I'm raising is that to me, that involves the state of Israel, that it was a combat situation, and they actually found fit in doing that. Surely, it's more than just a violation of human rights, it's criminality, and we saw that a body like the UN Security Council to actually fit to deal with that more firmly than something like a revolution. That's what I'm raising. Because to me, that's one critical area that I think it was to maintain international peace. We expect that such bodies should be able to prevail if it goes beyond just human rights issues. That's the specific area that I was saying.
Anyway, I'm not sure what really actually happened there, but I was just giving you general principles that would guide the international. The difficulty with that's also general, but it's very much known that we never find it very difficult to have a consensus in the United Nations when it comes to issues in the region. I want to believe maybe it got clouded to that. I don't expect to have all the information at the end, but probably it was clouded by that because the American. The second nation now, not to ensure that they always feel the Israelis, they look at them wrong, they don't go against the side of participating in any harsh judgment. And almost all much less for whether it's development, social development, or whether it's the decision of the arms of war, I think it's just against the rules of engagement in any war. Ourselves, as far as we are concerned now, we did augment our mission to six new, as we call them, one body. And it was out of our investigation, our consultation with countries of similar size who had been to the United Nations and became members. Permanent members, so as to for us to be able to charge what more capacity do we need to enhance our mission so that we don't overstaff them, but at the same time we don't understaff them. The indications we get for now, we think, according to the management of the mission, they are very comfortable. Obviously, there's a lot of work that. The other question asks, sensitive country and very political. Much matter of the institution, matter of the Madrid 2 and C5, or the FIFA, or the Korean, some kind of UCA work, or Africa, around the I've never said a view that unilateralism was all around. Because the majority member states of the UN will always defend back to the election. That's what the UN is about. But unilateralism, unfortunately, rears its head, as you alluded to in some of the big powers have serious or central issues that they would like to settle. So was the case when the coalition was formed for Iraq. Whether the coalition members were willing or willing was embedded commercially. I always put in the embedded commercially, but some of them I think have no choice but to refuse to join the big powers. Do something that they thought would benefit them in Iraq. Whether we can be able to stop this for good, I would speculate on that. I'm not so sure. But we will always campaign to ensure that multilateralism is the real answer to multilateral or global problems, and ensure that consolidate the community in multilateralism as a country, whether we're dealing with the peace or we're dealing with the General Assembly, or in any multilateral forum. We will always try and separate the best of our citizens. All these things must be said, must be solved within the United Nations, not outside. To deliver the continent. We said when we assume with the non-communist that we will champion, promote the African agenda. In as far as the security council is concerned, I think even your document that you gave today, which is the UN document, does indicate that there are a lot of issues that the different countries are dealt with that are situated on the continent. And our document specifically says what role did we play in as far as different across the continent on those issues that relate to the different countries. As qualified or trying to explain our assessment that we have not said. We have not said near 50% here and there, but on the whole, our assessment is that we have not said that we hope. Our hope, anywhere where the glimmer of hope, where the situation of hostility, we make sure that the Security Council through the United Nations puts up programs and programs to consolidate that peace and ensure that reconstruction and development of that country is not reversed. We told ourselves that within these 3 years, because there was, when we assumed this sentiment, there was indications that most of the conflicts, whether it was war really or the beginning of the period, that the political solutions are more they have a lasting effect on the fight. Most conflicts were moving towards some form of resistance. And I think we are witnessing that. And our role in the political solutions is to ensure that post-conflict reconstruction and development stage is supported by United Nations, including the invoking of the Peace Building Commission, because it was established for that. So our was just meant because I said you see the not safe. Yeah, I just out of shape into the question of high temperature issues, but that's what I said I'm not allowed to if we are joining the discussion. What happened to them? Are they parked forever forgotten, or is there a means of testing them against whatever direction, level of expression that or in the way we have in the second one again. Of interest, I don't know what you put it in. This is especially the development of refugees, I think, coming from through Egypt, that the Egyptians got it to them. So when these people are actually encouraged to get it off an island, are you aware of that? What could be done about it? I'm aware that there is a lot of head negligence.
Thank you very much. Especially with the issue of communication, Ambassador Nene referred to the roundtable discussion that was held in Pretoria 2 weeks ago between the Minister of Foreign Affairs and members of civil society. Out of that, in fact, the roundtable itself was triggered by the need to enhance core communication. Our assessment is that this is one area where we really need to work hard as the Department of Foreign Affairs to increase the communication between the department, parliament, civil society, academia, NGOs, and the media. So this is an area where that we are working on. In fact, at the moment, the department is combining the reports of that roundtable. Because there were some concrete recommendations that were made on how the department should engage further to increase awareness and an understanding in South Africa of the work that we are doing in the Security Council. So we will continue to work on that. We believe that it is in the interest of all of us, of the Department of Foreign Affairs, of Parliament, and of civil society, to ensure that we increase the level of communication. With regard to the issues that are not accepted to the agenda of the Security Council, I mean, most of these issues, in any case, are being discussed in other fora. I mean, the Human Rights Council, for example, does have an agenda that would from time to time refer to some of these issues. So the fact that issues are not brought into the agenda of the Security Council doesn't mean that the UN forgets about them. They get raised in other fora as well. But I think that in the manner of the United Nations, the way that the UN works, I mean, processes sometimes take quite a long time. It might be that today you do not get consensus amongst the member states on a particular issue, but it might be that in 5 years or 10 years' time you could get, I mean, I'm not only talking about the security related issues, but on any other issue in the US. You would ask earlier the question about terrorism. I mean, for the past more than 10 years now, there's been a discussion of the definition of terrorism. So far, there's no consensus, as Ambassador Nene was saying. But it's possible that in the next 5 years or in another 10 years there could be some form of consensus on what is the common understanding of the definition of terrorism. I mean, what, for example, if you use this example, what has happened is that, in fact, although there is no universal definition of terrorism, but there is indeed a lot of work that has been done by the UN on terrorism, focusing on the activities themselves, not so much on the comprehensive definition. The issue of the refugees, I mean, I would not be aware at the moment of, I don't have the technical details of this, but again, I am not aware of what happened there, but I would hazard to say that because in the UN, again, there are conventions that govern how refugees should be treated. I think those come into effect, as you know, I mean, the UNHCR is also one of the most active agencies. I would assume that they would be engaged in that matter. Thank you.
had other inspections, but it's really very strange, complicated. And the refugee submarine, they were not crossing to the institution, they updated us to the health division. So there you have IOM, international migration, international migration, you have the UNESCO.
Thank you, Ambassador. You said that you've never captured Jewish intelligence on the right, because you believe that the members of the EU and the UN are committed to maintain certain relations, and that's the essence of the UN. But you must would agree that it is true that members of the UN security countries, particularly those who are permanent members, when their interests, when in pursuit of their own interests, they sometimes you come to the UN only to get a blessing, but in fact they pursue their objective with or without the UN. If you look at the invasion of Iraq, when the second revolution was to be put, you had a number of interpretations attached to the first revolution. In fact, you had an interpretation that suggests that the first revolution does give one the right to move without the second revolution. So you see all those things happening. When the invasion was successful, you look at the spoils of the war, it was primarily amongst those who agreed to participate in the invasion. In fact, they divided the spoils among themselves. Halliburton being the most beneficiary out of all the others who were there. And if you look at Halliburton and then you look at the individuals involved, then it tells you a different story. But one issue that's also of interest is the fact that to what extent are members of the UN, not only the security countries, but as member states are able to engage on issues that really constitute threats to peace and security. Because in this instance, it is true that the members of the P5 members, their own foreign policies constitute instability in the world's peace and security. And then why do we find it easy to argue about Zimbabwe and when we cannot argue about those who have the power to invade? That in fact is their policies that constitute instability in the world, that constitute that threaten peace in the world. Why are we not able to do that? Why are we not able to say those are at the head of the coalition in fact they are responsible for what we have in part of what integrity we have in the world today? And I would be interested in the data the Security Council discuss views through foreign policy that creates that insecurity. Because it's true that those who possess the weapons of mass destruction are the first ones who jump if anyone else has the potential to develop that. But in fact, they are sitting with those weapons themselves. In fact, they are developing more. And if you look at the standoff between Russia and the U.S., it's in fact two of those armies issues. Sometimes my special structure says the UN needs to accept the fact that powerful members of the institution aren't living up to the goals and the charge of the institution. And in fact, all of us must be reached in line by those countries that themselves harbor elements or they found themselves having played
into the same element that you seek to fight in the world today. We are struggling with the division. We say that the policy is that they will agree on the what we call action of what constitutes terrorism. And we can go deeper and look at the what other members of the FIFA have done in this continent in terms of supporting voluntary movements in this continent. Does that not constitute what we cannot define? Are they today holier than holy than anyone else when they themselves are actually perpetrators of those actions? With those words, Ambassador, you said to me earlier that this is a political question. I'm raising this political question because I think at some point we are told that we need to behave in a particular way by the same person that cannot behave. So we are expected to behave, do what I say, don't do what I do. Because if you do what I do, I'll come back to harm you. Thank you. Thank you.